I can see you're really upset about this. I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
Ladies and gentlemen, August Donnelly.
Ladies and gentlemen, turn on the radio and pump up the volume. It's time for August Donnelly's Full Frontal. That's right. You're tuned in right here on CHRW Radio 94.9 FM. And I am the man, not the month, wishing you a good day or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are. Folks, we have a great show lined up for you tonight. It's been a while since I've been on the mic. I took a few months off for the summer. I enjoyed every moment of it. And now I'm back, large and in charge, and bringing you the straight goods. My guest tonight is a renowned professional volleyball star and a man who has represented his country by donning the Team Canada jersey in Olympic qualifiers, the Pan American Games, and the Norseca Championship, just to name a few of his many storied outings. To boot, he also calls the beautiful forest city of London, Ontario, his home. Tonight, on Full Frontal, we're joined by the ever-charming Paul Durden, and Paul will be joining us in just a few minutes, so as always, I simply ask that you don't even think about touching your knob. The one on the radio, I mean. As an aside, I want to take this brief opportunity to wish a very special happy birthday to my cousin and dear friend, Darcy Want, who turns 30 years old today. Darce, whoever thought the big 3-0. Man, I hope you have a great one, pal. With love from myself, the crew here at Full Frontal, and of course, your old friends, the obnoxious goaltender, and the late, lamented Simon No More Slapshots Argyle. Anyway, bro, hope you have a great 30th birthday. Drop me a line sometime and let me know how it went. Folks, usually we would be just about to get down to the listener email, but this show is just so damn jam-packed that we'll have to postpone those burning comments and questions until next time out. However, I do promise to get to your messages sooner than later, so no worries. This, of course, doesn't come as a shock to anybody anymore. It's probably not even considered news. In fact, it's probably considered old news. But I'm still convinced the world isn't going to get used to this for a very long time. As you all know, 6 weeks ago, the king of pop, Michael Jackson, passed away. This, of course, happened during my hiatus in my summer break, so I felt as though I haven't really had a chance to air my feelings concerning the matter. So, as a tribute to the late, great king of pop, I don't care what anybody says, all allegations aside, you know, the garbage, the hearsay, the man was arguably one of the most individually talented entertainers in world history. The man pioneered so many things, and let's face it, pop music would not be what it is today had Michael Jackson not come around. So, as a tribute to the late, great Michael Joseph Jackson, we're going to play the 1979 smash hit Don't Stop Till You Get Enough from his album Off the Wall. This is the section, of course, we like to call August's Audibles, where I throw on a little something I recently listened to in the car before I pulled into the studio. Anyway, here it is. Michael Jackson, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, from way back 30 years ago in 1979. Enjoy.
You know, I was wondering, you know, if you could keep on, because the force, it's got a lot of power, and it makes me feel like that. He makes me feel like that.
Fantastic. That song never gets old. I don't care what anybody says. You can still shake your rump to that one. Folks, it's time to get down to the interview we mentioned at the beginning of the show. I'm joined by Paul Durden, Canadian sporting celebrity and volleyball player extraordinaire. So let's get the 411 from Mr. Durden, shall we? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm joined by Paul Durden, professional volleyball player extraordinaire and proud Canadian. Paul, thank you for making some time for us here at Full Frontal.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Right off the hop, Paul, I mentioned that you're, of course, a proud Canadian. But what some listeners may not know is that you're from right here, your hometown, as well as my own, London, Ontario. Can you tell folks what your life was like growing up in London and perhaps how you got involved with sports, eventually leading into your storied career in volleyball?
To start with, growing up here in London was a fantastic experience. I was adopted at 6 weeks old and lucky enough to fall into the Durden family, which was a blessing because my parents always provided what I needed growing up. And I should stress needed because they definitely didn't give me everything I wanted. I was always supported in athletic or academic endeavors or anything in that way to the fullest that I wanted to pursue something. So I had a fantastic childhood, and my parents pushed me to be involved in, you know, all sports, take some music classes, just they pushed me to experience everything and then let me kind of choose to go whatever route I wanted, whatever I liked the best. So it was a fantastic experience that way. And looking back on it, I think lucky events kind of directed me into the path of volleyball. And it was, you know, first off going to Oak Ridge where they had an excellent volleyball program as opposed to, at that time, the football team wasn't as good. And the volleyball coach said, hey, Vaughn Peckham said, don't go out for football, they aren't any good, you're a volleyball player. Come to volleyball practice, and that was it. You know, if that doesn't happen, who knows what I'm doing right now. Little events like that throughout my career have made me believe that luck or fate has had a hand in where I've ended up.
Unfortunately, as with any sport, many people don't seem to fully understand the undertakings involved until they play that particular sport at least an organized level, you know, professional involvement like yourself, of course, being another huge step altogether. What can you tell folks about your training regimen and what sort of skills you need to hone aside from the obvious, you know, hand-eye coordination to compete at your level with volleyball?
Volleyball is a sport which isn't great for your body because it involves so much jumping. So a key to my success and throughout my career is simply trying to remain professional and stay in the best shape possible at all times, because basically if you let yourself get weak, then your joints are going to take even more of a pounding. So to play volleyball well, you need to take care of yourself and stay in good shape. So my training regimen is really strict. I'm off for the summer right now. I've stopped playing with the national team, but I'm still training 5 days a week and trying to get some extra activity in on the weekends just to maintain a basic level so that when I get back into the pro season, I'm not going to get hurt. And that's just the way volleyball is. But if you take care of yourself, it's a fantastic sport to play, but it's hard on the body, all the jumping, the hitting, diving.
Suffered any significant injuries yourself that have taken, you know, quite a bit of rehab, things like that?
Definitely. I've broken fingers, broken bones in my hand, torn my hamstring, had 3 knee surgeries. But that said, I've been relatively lucky because I've been playing for so long that I haven't had too many major things that's threatened my career. So basically everything that's happened to me has been more along the wear and tear lines, except for, you know, the ankle sprain here and there. So I have been lucky, knock on wood. But yeah, the injuries do happen. And for me, it's I've just had chronic knee tendonitis, things like that, from all the jumping that just comes with the sport.
I guess that's true. It does come with the territory. Something I guess, always had a mind for the macabre. What, is there a particular, forgive me for asking this question, but I know, you know, inquiring minds always want to know these kind of things. Is there anything in particular that sticks out in your mind, given, like you said, your long career, you've played for many, many years now, as far as seeing, you know, really grisly injury? And the reason I say this is because when people talk about sports like baseball or volleyball or basketball, they consider them to be a non-contact sport, as you alluded to, but just because the physical contact isn't there like it is in, say, hockey or rugby, you can definitely see some pretty grisly injuries.
Looking through some of the people we've interviewed before, he had Clive Barker, and he's written some pretty grisly stuff. I love reading his stuff. But the most common grisly type injury you'd see would be probably dislocated fingers, just blocking, because the ball is traveling so fast that if a blocker reaches the wrong way and contacts the ball with their hand with their fingers, either taking it straight on or off the side, that it'll literally tear your finger out to the side and dislocate it. That's fairly common. The grossest thing I've seen is there was a Dutch player, and he was a real tall guy, about 6'10", really thin, and he landed from a block and his tibia shattered. Yeah, it's just to see the look of his teammates, and I mean, he was white as a ghost and in shock, but That was the ugliest thing I've seen if you're looking for something gruesome.
For those that aren't up on their anatomy, the tibia being the long bone in your shin between the knee and ankle. So right through the middle, Paul says, and yeah, that's being a weight-bearing bone and being a substantially sized bone, that's got to be pretty nasty, having that shattered.
That's definitely number one.
still indelibly burned into your memory. Now, this might seem an odd question, but you just mentioned, of course, this Dutch player who had that misfortune being, you know, 6'10". People often associate above average or tall height with certain sports, such as basketball or volleyball. Paul, can you tell listeners how much of a factor you think that height plays in the world of volleyball? And, for example, how tall are you?
I'm 6'4.5", 6'5", and I'm probably average, maybe a little below average, especially around the national team. I have a lot of big friends, but I feel normal when I'm with teammates. It's when I, you know, get back with friends in London or just I'm away from the volleyball scene that I realize, hey, I'm tall. At 6'5", I need to jump fairly well to compete because most guys are a little taller and have long arms. But with the inclusion of the libero rule, they have a full-time defensive player now in volleyball, and they've included two per each team's roster as well now. The libero can basically be any size because the key to that position is your defensive specialist, and the key is quickness. The best libero I've ever seen is a Korean player, and this guy's only about 5'8", but he's lightning. The setting position as well, normally the guys can be smaller. So if you want to play, there is a position for you. There's just less positions available if you're smaller. You want to be a libero or setter, or you need to jump out of the gym.
Probably a little overdue as far as my training and things like that. Well, the hand-eye coordination is there. I've got the baseball thing down, and hey, I think the ball's probably traveling just as fast in baseball. You mentioned the speed again, too, with the injuries and things like that in volleyball. Do you know, like, how fast certain guys can spike the ball, or is there certain, like, things, like, do they clock that ever, or what are the speeds like?
A good spike serve is over 100 kilometers an hour and would get up to possibly 120, and then the attacks are all at that speed as well. So it's a really fast game because when you're in a defensive position off of the net, you're only 4 or 5 meters away from the attack, so you have a fraction of a second to react to it when it's traveling that fast, so... It's a really quick game. You're at the limits of the reaction time when you're trying to make a defensive play. If the ball's hit full speed, you've got to... Yeah, it's almost instinctual. You know, that's why you have to train repetition so much because you don't have time to think. It's simply reaction or you've missed it. And yeah, it's quick that way.
It's my understanding that you joined the Canadian men's national team way back in 1993 and have been going strong with them ever since. How did you end up with the honor of representing your country on the global stage, and how has that perhaps changed you as a person?
I was playing with the Ontario provincial team from 91 to 93, preparing for the Canada Summer Games. And in the summer of 92, the head coach of the national team at the time, Clément Lemieux, was going from various provincial team, just doing training camps with the teams and learning about the players that were coming up. And I had a chance to train under him for a few sessions, and I caught his eye. During the year in 93, when I was trying to make a decision about what university to go to, I got a call from Clément saying, "We believe you have some potential. You're not good enough to make the team right now, but we want you to come out for a year as just a test run. And we think we can turn you into a player, but come for a year, give it a try. If it doesn't work out, go back to university. That'll always be there. But if it works out, stay with us." And if it weren't for that call, I mean, that was a huge taking off point for me because I did join the national team after that summer of 93, was immediately immersed, you know, with the best players in Canada, and that just did quantum leaps for my game because you're forced to either catch up or you're out. And so I was able to make the jump, but it wouldn't be possible. If I had gone to try out for the team, you know, I wouldn't make it. I wasn't good enough. The potential was there, and he saw it, luckily enough, and gave me the shot.
Now, you, of course, helped lead Team Canada to a silver medal at the 2003 Norseca Championship in Mexico and a bronze medal at the 99 Pan Am Games in Winnipeg. Would you consider these to be the highlights of your career? I'm certain it's hard to pick a favorite given your extensive international play, but how would these rank?
Well, the Norseca, we play 3 years out of four with the national team, and it's used as a qualifier. The second place finish that we had was our best result while I was with the team, so that was definitely a highlight. But my best moments with the national team were playing the World Championships and the World Cups in Japan and being at the major international competitions. So although we didn't come home with any medals from those competitions, going to them and having good results was it's hard to pick specific matches. The best match I probably played with the national team was a qualifier for the World Championships, and we had drawn Cuba in our pool. At the time, we were third or fourth ranked in the world, and we went to Havana and beat them 3-1 in their own gym to qualify, and sent them into another round of qualifying. And that was probably one of the greatest matches I played with the team, just because of the incredibly high level we ascertained that night as a team and what it meant, because it was a ticket to world championships that we weren't expecting to get.
Now, conversely, Paul, can you recall a particularly difficult or heartbreaking moment during your career that will perhaps always stand out in your memory, again, given your extensive international play?
That's an easy one. Not qualifying for the Olympics, and that unfortunately happened to me 4 times. I joined the team so young that I was involved with the program for 4 Olympic cycles, and I joined the national team with the sole intent to go to the Olympics. That's why I was there, and that's why I stuck with it so long in my career. For sure, I'd be in a better physical condition right now if I'd taken a few more summers off from the national team and just concentrated on my pro seasons. But the draw of the Olympics was always it for me and was too much. So I always committed to the national team with the hopes of going. So the most disappointing thing, which happened, you know, routinely every 4 years, was being eliminated from that qualification process. And yeah, it's devastating because, you, I mean, you put everything you've got into training for, you know, 1 or 2 matches which you need to win to qualify, and when it doesn't happen, it's heartbreaking.
Absolutely, I can imagine. Do you foresee yourself perhaps having another opportunity to try for the Olympics, or is that in the cards, do you think?
No, not for me. I've 4 shots was enough. A couple guys I've played with who have a British heritage have one of them has switched over to the British national team, actually, to get there that way. And my father was from England, but I'm adopted, so I had applied for citizenship after I turned pro, just for hopes of, you know, having more access to teams, because they have a European Union rule for the players, so it's easier if you have a British passport to get a job in Europe, because you're not considered an international foreigner. But I had applied for it and didn't get it. If I was going to the Olympics, I'd want to go for Canada. You know, it's not a matter of just getting there any way I can. I want to play for Canada and have the maple leaf on the jersey.
Well, it's definitely you know, something I'm sure people will be very proud to hear, and it's definitely a good thing to want to represent your country. Now, having played literally all over the world and having played professionally with teams from Germany, Belgium, Italy, France, and Turkey, just to name a few, do you ever find yourself fearful of your well-being or having difficulty in adjusting to new cultures and customs while you're living abroad?
Never been fearful, but there's my most difficult season was probably the first one, just, you know, going to Germany where there's a huge language barrier, and just not being familiar with the pro system and what to expect from a pro season. It's completely different from being with a national team. With the pro team, you're expected to perform every single weekend, and if the team doesn't win, they're looking at the foreigners for the reason why it didn't happen. So you're under a kind of different spotlight there, and there's a different kind of pressure, but at the same time, it's a really exciting place to be, and it's somewhere you do want to be, but there's definitely a learning curve in terms of adapting to it and learning how to thrive in that situation. So after the first couple of seasons, I knew what to expect volleyball-wise, and then it simply became a matter of adapting to each culture. And I think it's just been a great experience, and I try to, you know, take everything I can from where I'm living and get a feel for what the people are like and what they like to do. And it's been a great ride. You know, I've like being in Turkey the last few years has been fantastic. Going to Turkey, I didn't know anything, good or bad. I mean, I've heard there's earthquakes there, and that's about it through our media. The people there are fantastic, really friendly, and the food's great, the culture's incredible, and the history, and it's a fantastic learning experience. And I feel like unfortunately I haven't gone to university, but I've, you know, I have a world education just because I've lived and worked in so many places and had to work well with completely different people.
Absolutely, and that's just, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there. There's so much you can learn from being a worldly individual that are things you would never learn in a classroom anyway. I mean, you can spend all the money you want at, whether it's UWO or Yale or McGill or Harvard, and there's just certain things you can only watch so many slideshows before you really know what it's like when you actually live there. Now, obviously, this interview is, of course, about you, and I greatly appreciate you again being on the show, but I understand that you've played for some years alongside a fellow by the name of Dustin Reed. Paul, it's time to dish the dirt. What sort of guy is Dustin really, and is he as good of a volleyball player as we've all been led to believe?
Dustin's a great volleyball player. I've known Dustin for years. We battled each other in club in Ontario and then played together on the provincial team and won a Canada Games gold medal together, and then played on the national team for a number of years after that. And Dustin's a great guy. He's a rocker. He loves to thrash, and he's a crazy guy, but he's first class. Yeah, I love Dustin. He's great.
There you go, right from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Apparently Dustin's not a bad guy after all. So for those of you that are listening and you know who you are, that's the Paul Durden take on Dustin Reed. So going forward, Paul, what can your fans expect to hear of you as far as your playing career goes and perhaps life after coaching, you know, that sort of thing?
This next season in Turkey, I imagine, will be my last. I've got three boys who live in London with their mom, and they're fantastic kids, but they need their dad around, you know. I've been traveling too long, too much, and so I want to get back to London hopefully by next fall. I'll play this next season in Turkey, and then things organized for a move back to London. But I want to be back here that following year and create a life here in London, closer to them. In terms of what I'll be doing, my fiance right now, she owns a gym in Winnipeg. She's one of the top trainer strength coaches in Canada. She worked with the national teams for 8 years. She's worked with triathletes, provincial soccer team, everything, Olympic swimmers, you name it, she's trained them. So we're hoping to come back to London and create some high performance camps and put together some programs to benefit the volleyball community and the sporting community here in London, share our knowledge that we've been able to gain over all these years in various situations, and turn that hopefully into something we can make a living from, but also help the community and the kids in London.
Well, it's obviously important to give back, and I mean, between the two of you, it sounds as though you've got, you know, a wealth of knowledge and a world of experience, given you've been all over and had such extensive travels. Paul, if your fans and folks in general wish to contact you to request an autograph or send fan mail to you, what would be the best way about going to do so?
Well, they should check out my completely novice website. It's pauldurden.com, and you can reach me there. I think I have a link where you can send me a message, and then I'll try to get back to you. But they should check that out, because I'm in the process of trying to get ready for life after volleyball. So we're trying to put together some training DVDs and some instructional DVDs and things like that people should check out and see if they're interested in. Yeah, definitely contact me there, and I'll do my best to get back to you.
To clarify, that's www.paulduerden.com, correct? Pauldurden.com. Paul, I really, really appreciate you being here on the show. It was a pleasure to speak to you, and thank you very much again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Folks, we are all out of time for another edition of August Donnelly's Full Frontal. Remember, you can catch us right here on 94.9 FM CHRW Radio or on Rogers Digital Cable Channel 943, Mondays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We're also online anywhere in the world via chrwradio.com, and listen for intermittent broadcasts of the show throughout the week. Until next time, if you have any questions for myself or a guest, past or present, send an email to august@chrwradio.com or visit my official website at www.augustdonnelly.com. Tune in again, and you just might learn something.